Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Good morning, Jacob's Well. Great to have you all here with us today. I'm Greg Meyer, your host today. Actually, I'm just a pastor, but close enough. Anyway, we are here talking groove truth today, and we've been talking about new grooves for the last 2 weeks, and the reason we're talking about grooves and all these new grooves, kind of like Amanda gave us a little peek into, is that they don't really seem to quit, do they? I mean, 2 weeks ago, I talked about the fact that we kind of had this illusion that life is really these nice plateaus we exist on. Every once in a while, they're interrupted by one of these uncomfortable, undesirable transition times, and we are anxious to get over that, get back to status quo, get back to equilibrium. And I think if we're really honest with ourselves and back up, we realize that's not a very good description of life at all, is it? I mean, life is really just a series of transition after transition after transition. And those plateaus are more a matter of our imaginations than they are of any kind of real description of life. So as soon as we kind of let go of that and realize that life is sort of about new grooves and what it means to be people who do that, we start getting, finding our way on this path to answer this question, which is the question that Israel was asking. And the question I think that we are still asking today is that, how do we find life? How do we find life? That is, I want you to hold on to that question. That is a big question. It's really kind of the background of this whole month of January. I mean, it's kind of the whole background of what all of us are trying to do with life in general. But how do we find life? That is a question Israel's asking. That's a question that we are asking today. And so Israel, you know, that's the other side of this new grooves piece. We're not only looking at our lives and how we move from groove to groove, but we're looking at how Israel did this like 3,000 years ago. We like to be timely here with Jacob's Well, you know? So we thought we'd get our news from something 3,000 years ago. But seriously, Israel, the people of God, as they understood themselves, went to enormous pains to share with us what they discovered about being people that are always on the move. People that don't have it figured out, but that are always figuring it out. People that are finding this one new groove after another. And so in particular, we are digging into 25 verses from the Torah, right? The Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is the last one. And where those 25 verses come from Deuteronomy chapter 8 and then a little bit into chapter 9. And the background of that, first of all, I'd say, you know, listen to the first week, the January, 8th, I think it was, if you missed that and kind of want to know what all this is about. That's where we kind of set the background of this chapter in Deuteronomy. But what was going on there is Israel had been enslaved in Egypt, according to, you know, the saga as it's recorded in the Bible. They've been enslaved in Egypt for 400 years. Moses frees them from the Pharaoh. They wander across through the wilderness for 40 years. And they finally get to the River Jordan, which is sort of the last, that's the gateway to the Promised Land, right? Once they cross the Jordan, they're there. And so there they are at the banks of the Jordan, and all this is taking place. And they're asking themselves, what does it mean for us to enter the Promised Land? How do we find life there? Because when they get there, they realize, they look across here, it doesn't actually look that different than where we came from. I mean, there seem to be as many challenges on the other side as there were here. And what they're discovering about themselves is, you know, we've been walking, literally, for 40 years to get here, and now we're here, and the message is, we're supposed to keep walking? I mean, didn't we just arrive? Can't we, like, sit down for a while? But the message is that, no, you are people who are on a journey. You are people of transition. You are people of discovering life at every turn. And the big thing here is they didn't go to great pains to share this with us because they figured it all out and they want us to learn what they learned. No, actually, we'll be talking about this a lot next week. they actually are pretty critical of themselves, saying, we really didn't figure it out. And that's why we want to tell you our story, because we're hoping you can do better than we did. So you need to know not everything we mastered, but you have to hear our journey and learn from it. And they're pretty amazingly honest and open to us and giving us some great stuff. So Grew of Truth is one part of that bigger message that we've been talking about, and it's probably kind of the tougher stuff to accept, the tougher stuff to handle. It's a message I think probably all of us like to hear, the message we want, but when we actually have to apply it to ourselves and the way we live and what we're doing and what we try to make happen in this world, we find that we don't do as well with it as maybe we would like to. This new groove that it's inviting to is about who we can be for others. It's about living out our privilege. And yes, we all have privilege. There are lots of kinds of privilege. And in every relationship, every person is not only a receiver, but a giver. We all have something to share with other people, and this is what they are calling us into here in these days. Now, okay, a little note. This is a little personal note aside. When we create these series for us to talk about months ahead of time, kind of figure out what they're going to be and map them out and so on, and we do try to prognosticate, all right? I mean, we look at what's going on in society. What are things we need to think about, talk about? What is the larger message of faith and so on leading us to? So we try to get these things to line up, but I am just amazed how often when we actually get to the week that we are going to talk about what we've been thinking about for a long time, it seems to be like spot on to what's happening today. Now, this week is no exception. We decided a long time ago that we were going to be talking about this groove truth. And, well, that's what we have going on right now. It's this component to the message that Israel got drummed into their heads, and they went through great pains to make sure that we would hear, and it's recorded here in Deuteronomy 8 and 9. And it's exactly, I think, what happened at the state capitol yesterday, what happened in Washington, D.C., what happened all around the world in the Women's March that we heard Amanda talk about just a little bit. And it is about us being these people who are always on a journey, that are walking, literally. You may remember from the first week, the Halakha. This passage in Deuteronomy is called a Halakha, which means Hebrew for walking, and is their understanding of how they find their way with God. So it is this message that we have, and that what it tells us is that this is always about all of us, not just some of us, and that the way to make things happen is together, never on our own. And the path towards sufficiency and fulfillment isn't found through victory, but it's found through sacrifice. And that when we forget that what we have, when we forget what we have came from, where what we have came from, I can say that. When we forget where what we have came from, it hurts us. It alienates us from one another. It cuts us off from life. That question, how do we find life? Now, like I said, Israel isn't recording this for us because they had it mastered and want to make sure that we follow example. No, they found this to be one of the most difficult parts of their journey. And so they share how they never got it right with us in the chapters and in the books that follow Deuteronomy in the Bible. But let me read just a couple of verses from this saga of Israel's, which is part of our Deuteronomy 8 and 9. And remember, this is thousands of years old, okay? So you kind of have to read through and listen through the change in time and culture and so on. And yes, this is in our soap readings. Amanda talked about that. And soap, if like you say, what are you talking about, soap? I never use soap. Yeah, you've got other problems. But soap is just what we think of as a manageable and a sustainable way to get to know the Bible and to kind of learn how to use it and get that bigger picture view of it. And so we do it here. It's a nice little, something you can do in 10 minutes every day. If you want to find that, if you go to Facebook and look up Jacob's Well Soap. Is that right, Chris? Jacob's Well Soap. Or if you, on your communication card, just write, invite me, and we will invite you to that Facebook page. How's that? That'll work too. So anyway, so this is in there. So let me read these verses. Here we have Moses, who's leading Israel out of Egypt, okay? They're at the River Jordan. They're at their journey's end. And Moses is telling Israel what he had heard from God, and this is a piece of it. When you have eaten your fill and have built fine houses and live in them, And when your herds and flocks have multiplied, and your silver and gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, i.e., things have gone pretty well for you in the promised land, all right? Then do not exalt yourself, forgetting Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, an arid wasteland with poisonous snakes and scorpions. You'll like those things, I know. But, and then he goes on and says, do not say to yourself, my power and the might of my own hand have gotten me this wealth. But remember Yahweh your God, for it is Yahweh who gives you power to get wealth in order to confirm the covenant that Yahweh swore to your ancestors, as is being done today. In short, Israel is just like everybody else. We all turn to God, Yahweh, the name of God in the Old Testament. We all turn to God when things are tough, when we need help, when everything, when the world has gone bluey, you know, we pray. The statistics tell us that 90% of Americans pray, and 88% of Americans don't pray when they got through the crisis. All right? I mean, that's how it works. As soon as we're doing okay, we go back to being okay. As soon as everything is running the way we want it to be, we're loan operators, we put things on autopilot, and we dance to Frank Sinatra's I Did It My Way. Here's a lesson that I think we can take away from this. When we take credit, this is on your outline, on the back of your Sunday papers if you want to follow along. When we take credit for what others did and we benefited from, we unravel the fundamental relatedness of all things. When we take credit for what others have done and we benefited from, we don't just like get it wrong. It's just not like not honest or, you know, lying. I mean, those are maybe problems too, but the problem is when we do that, we're unraveling the fundamental relatedness that makes things work and that wants to lead us on into the future. So this is a problem because it is how the world is put together. It is a path towards how we find life. Now, you may not put a lot of stock in the Bible, or maybe you do. Maybe you care about what these ancient people of Israel did and learned, and maybe you don't. But like I said a couple of times already, they went through great pains to make this learning of where one's privilege comes from be a part of their DNA. And they did it for themselves, because not for just us, but for all people who are going to wrestle with God, because they knew this was something we were going to consistently get wrong over and over again. And so it needed to be put down into the very core of who they were as a people to keep getting this straight. Now, how did they do that? There's a clue in this reading. And that last passage, let me just read the last verse again, and we'll see where this is going. It says, but remember Yahweh your God, for it is Yahweh who gives you power to get wealth in order to confirm the covenant that Yahweh swore to your ancestors, as is being done today. Now, the key words there are, in order to confirm the covenant. The covenant. The covenant for Israel is everything. I mean, we just read that as another kind of Bible word, and we just keep reading and kind of miss it. Not Israel. Not the Jewish people. The covenant was everything. The covenant isn't something that they would ever even imagine arguing with God about, because it isn't an arguable thing. It's just like you can't argue with God about who God is, because God isn't just sort of some arbitrary divine being, but God is Yahweh, which means I am who I am. How can you argue with the one who is what it is? Likewise, the covenant isn't to be argued with, because it isn't an arbitrary rule or law or deal that God brokered with us. It is simply a description of a way the cosmos works. It is the way things are is the way things are. It's a description of life. You can argue with that. And God is just starting to give them a window into it and how it all works. So what is that covenant? Actually, it's, you know, when you ask someone today, you know, what is the covenant? What is Israel's covenant with God? And people go, I don't know. Well, yeah, actually, it's so simple, you can know it. I mean, it's really, really basic. Here we have this covenant being given to the first time. It's spoken to Abraham, who is this ancestor who first received the covenant. It was Abraham, okay? And God is speaking to Abraham when God first calls Abraham to leave everything he has and the place that he has always known to go on a journey. Sound familiar? And God says this, I will make you a great nation and I will bless you and I will make your name great. That's the promise. That's the dream. That's the hope. And it's huge and it's wonderful. But now comes the purpose for that hope, that dream, that promise. So that, right? This is the why. This is how come all that hope and dream and purpose. Let me just read the whole verse again. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. The covenant is really just these five words. Blessed to be a blessing. Let's make it seven. You are blessed to be a blessing. That is the whole covenant. It's a summation of everything God wants them to know to be. They are not blessed to have a lot, not blessed to have trouble-free lives, not blessed to have more than someone else, not blessed because they are so great. They are blessed to be a blessing. See, you see, in God's economy, it's very different than maybe our human instinct, but we know this is true because we also understand the way to the path towards life when we hear it. Our hearts respond to it. And in God's economy, you are not a recipient of a blessing, you are an agent of a blessing. It isn't something that you have, it is something that you share. Now, this goes deeper, okay? This covenant, which is sort of the whole rule book, the whole kit and caboodle for the Jewish people, is basic, but it even goes deeper yet. Let me run you through this quickly so we can take a little time to think about what it means. So there is a covenant, you are blessed to be a blessing, which we just were talking about. Then there is the law, the Torah, the mitzvot, the commandments, better thought of as guidelines or teachings. 613 laws, and then the Ten Commandments that everybody is supposed to follow all the time. Seems like a whole lot, but the Jews, you know, look at that and say, well, it's actually very, very easy to summarize this. I mean, you don't have to remember all 613 things. There's some real basic logic behind it all. And it's summed up in these two statements. First of all, there's the Shema. We talked about that 2 weeks ago, okay? It's in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, and it's in your soap readings this week, where it says, listen, O Israel, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh alone. You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart and soul and strength. Can you remember that? All right? Then the second part of it, which is part of the great summary of all the Torah, is even simpler. And it comes from, pulled out of Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. You all knew that. I'm sorry to be so redundant. And it's this, and it's going to be really familiar to you. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And that is all of the Torah. And those two things. Listen, O Israel, the Lord is, your God is the Lord alone, and you love your neighbor as yourself. Together, long before Jesus' time, these two phrases were coupled as the summation of the Torah, the law, and once again, along with the covenant, they described what it meant to be people of God, what it meant to be people who wrestled with God, which is what Israel means, those who wrestle with God. And what it means is telling us that there is a radical inclusiveness in God's love. It is a radical inclusiveness in God's economy. Okay, so one step deeper yet, okay? 1,000 years or so later, this guy comes named Jesus. And frankly, he has nothing new to say because after all, God has been God all along, okay? But people kind of do the people thing. They reduce God. They put God in boxes that don't really fit. They try to make it all simple. They try to make it work for themselves, because that's so much easier than making it work for all people. And so what Jesus did was to live out this in a radical way and consistently let God be God, consistently let God out of the box. And he did this in the way in the things that he said. He did it in who he was and in what he did. And so in his journeys, and Jesus goes, we find this radically inclusive understanding of God's economy played out one more time. So there's this story that you're going to probably recognize about a lawyer who comes to ask Jesus some questions. He doesn't really like Jesus. Now, you can all forget your lawyer jokes. They're true, but lawyers in Jesus' time were different, okay? I mean, the only law there was the Torah. Sorry, Tessa. The only law there was the Torah. So basically, lawyers were religious leaders, all right? Saying how the Torah was supposed to be lived out. That was it, all right? And this lawyer did not like this young upstart from outstate Palestine coming and like taking all the crowds and telling people what they're supposed to do and undermining the business they had going. And so he decides he's going to put Jesus in his place. And he's going to ask him some tough questions. So let me read it here. Just then a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher, Rabbi," he said, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Hear that question? How do I find life? Eternal life, full life, life without limits, okay? How do I find life? And Jesus says to him, "Well, what is written in the law? What does Torah say? What do you read there?" And he answers, "You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all his strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." The summary of the Torah, right? And Jesus says to him, "You have given the right answer. Do this, and you will live. Live according to that, and you will find life." But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus one more question. "And who is my neighbor?" Aha, Jesus. That radical inclusiveness, I can head it off at the pass. All right? I mean, can't we limit it? That's his sticking point. I know I'm supposed to love Lord my God with all my heart and soul and mind. I'm supposed to love my neighbor as myself, but can't I kind of get some limits in here someplace? I mean, don't we all have that sticking point? Don't we have the things that we don't want to include in this? Don't we have the stuff that we find objectionable that's not right, that doesn't fit our definitions? And so he asked Jesus that question, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus, being a good rabbi, took him on, but not by answering his question, because rabbis never did that, but he asked him a question back. In fact, he tells him a story. We call it a parable. And the parable ends in a question. You can imagine why maybe the lawyer wanted some clarification on this. Here at Jacob's Well, we talk about rope. We talk about our lives being woven together, ourself and God and others. I think you're going to hear that resonating in what we're talking about today. And when we start weaving that together, sometimes it feels a little tight. Sometimes we find that when we're woven that tightly and realize our interdependence with one another and how much it means that we are in this inclusive economy, sometimes we want out. Sometimes we want to do it our way. Sometimes we want to unravel that, or at least just not have it raveled so far that we lose who we are, not realizing that we discover who we are in all that. So, back to Jesus' question. Jesus replied, story that you probably know, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho." Familiar story? Story of the Good Samaritan. I won't read you the whole thing. It's your job. It's on soap, too. But you kind of know, so this man is going down on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he meets a bunch of robbers. They beat him up, leave him for dead on the side of the road, and along comes a priest, a religious man. A priest is certainly going to help him, right? And doesn't want to get messed up in a hurry. Who knows? We don't hear his excuses, but he kind of walks around him and keeps on going. And then a Levite, another religious leader, comes and sees him. Does the same thing, walks around him, keeps on going down the road. And then a Samaritan comes. Okay, we don't really know what Samaritans are, but Samaritans were like, really, a Samaritan? I mean, they're not our people. They aren't from here. They're from a long ways away. They worship God wrong. They are the quintessential outsiders. But the Samaritan stops. He takes care of him. He does whatever he needs to do in order to make sure that that man gets the help and the attention, the love, the support that he needs. So you get to the end of the story, and Jesus ends it by asking, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" The lawyer says, "Well, I suppose the one who showed him mercy." Jesus says to him, "Go. and do likewise. Jesus says, love, and do it without walls. Just love. So what's this about? I'm just trying to drive home the central point of what this whole book is all about. If you're going to read this book and you want to know what some of the weird and strange parts about, remember the Torah. Remember the summary of the Torah. Remember the covenant. It's a guide for the whole thing. It helps us understand who Jesus was and what he was about at the same time. And that central point is what the people of Israel understood what it meant for them to be called to be people of God. And it was basically in a couple of things, and these are on your outline as well. First of all, the life that we seek is all about love. The life that we seek is all about love. Not sentimental, kind of wishy-washy, oh, love is always the answer, you're going to go to church. No, love, like the kind of love that matters. The kind of love that you would die for. The kind of love where you'll draw the line in the sand and say, I can't let you cross that. The kind of love that we give ourselves for. Loving with your whole heart, your soul, and your strength. Next, life isn't just about you. Okay, it is about you because you are one of those three strands in that rope and you are essential and important and unique, but it is only about you in the context of us. You cannot separate you from us. And when you do, you're in trouble, we're in trouble. The Bible, these passages talk about a curse or a blessing. When we, those aren't like punishments. When we do it on ourselves, God punishes us. We get smitten by God. No, it means that when we do that, we are out of sync with the way the world is put together, with what Torah is all about, with what this covenant is all about, and it just turns into a curse among us. And when we live together, when we realize that it is about us, and we allow ourselves to be woven together with God's wisdom pulling us and making that whole, we find that it becomes a blessing. So, and that is kind of this message that we are a pipe, not a bucket. We are a conduit of what God has given us, not just a receptacle that gets to keep it and have it. Next, that us includes you and all the blessings entrusted you. It also includes God, this I am who I am that sums up all of existence. And it also includes the neighbor. All of them included fully and inextricably woven together. Last, there are no boundaries on who our neighbors are. There are no boundaries. This love, this blessing that we are agents, not possessors of, belongs to all people, period. Now, in reflecting back, Israel made it clear that this is something that they constantly got pulled away from. They constantly forgot. And so they did everything they could to weave it into the meaning of what it meant for them to be the people of God so that they would constantly be reminded. It was essential for them to know this and to be those kind of people so that they could live in the promised land and learn how to find life. They were so explicit about it that the verses following the Shema, listen, O Israel, the Lord your God is one, are these words. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children. Talk about them when you're at home and when you're away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your hand. Fix them as an emblem on your forehead. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. I would say that's kind of a prescription too. I think you're going to kind of have to keep reminding yourself of this. Don't forget. We forget them today, too, don't we? We think separate is better than together. We believe there is an us that doesn't need them. We think that wealth through possession displaces generosity in the common human economy. And certainty, our desire for certainty, keeps us from fulfilling the initial command in the Shema. Listen. Listen. I think the March on Washington that we saw here in St. Paul and that was around the world yesterday was calling us back to these same basic truths that speak to that eternal question, how do we find life? And I'm sorry if that sounds political. This message of God's love and its radical inclusiveness is not the territory of one political party or another. It is something that we all have to look for, or we all have to check, we all have to be seeking for one another. It is not the property or the territory of one race or one gender or one group. It is the territory of humanity. It is the core of the message that gives life to this book. And it is the message that Jesus staked his life on. And as people who weave lives of self and God and others, it is our job to not only practice it ourselves, but to call out where we see it losing ground. And to not only speak it, but to live it in our day-to-day relationships with one another. And not because we are right and others are wrong, but because we know when we start living in ways that do not reflect these basic ideals behind how the world is put together and woven together, that we find that we become a curse and not a blessing to our world. And it all starts with knowing that we are woven together. One of the things that Jesus did, as well as maybe reminding us that we should teach this to our children and speak about it at home and on the road and writing it on our hands and our foreheads and put on the doorpost of our house, but Jesus said, I'm also going to give you a meal. I want you to keep coming to this table, because at a table is the place we remember that we are one. That we are one family. And we share this bread and we share this wine with each other, signaling that God has given us what we need to live, and it is ours to share this blessing with others. We are called to be this blessing. So we're going to have communion now. Everyone is invited. If you are looking at how God is real in your life through this community, this is a great opportunity to do it. There are five tables around the room, up in the corners and here, and one at the central table. And we just invite you to come, and there's couple different kinds of bread, and there is wine is dark and grape juice is light. And little full disclosure, we are a little short on wine this week. I was gone, not my fault. But there's a lot of grape juice. And if you do need an allergy-free option for the bread, you can come to this table, okay? There's some sweets and beets here. So come and receive this and share these gifts with one another, right? Don't just come and get to yourself. But I think the whole point is that we're called to be a blessing. So take these blessings of God, give them to someone else. You don't have to worry about saying the right thing. Just say anything or nothing. And the image I would have is when you meet people in the world and you're kind of maybe wondering, is this my neighbor? Or how would I react to this person? Just imagine being at this table and pulling off a chunk of bread and handing it to them and say, this is the gift of God, given for you.
There's a rhythm in us these days, where the lights don't move and the colors don't...
On your Sunday paper, you'll find a homework question. It says, we all have blessings, no matter who we are. What is one unique to you that you can turn towards another person to make a difference in their life? Do it. All right? Let me give you one little last tidbit about this whole Deuteronomy story, and we're going to talk about some other stuff next week as well, but one little piece, you can keep standing, I won't keep you long, all right? And that is, they're at the River Jordan, okay, ready to cross over, but who doesn't get to go across? Moses, all right? The guy who started the whole thing, got him out of Egypt, led him for 40 years across the wilderness, he does not get to cross the Jordan. Now, why? I mean, I know, I'm sure there's a million answers, and I'm sure the Talmud has gone crazy with speculating about it, but I think one thing that's clear in context of what we're talking about today is the person that begins a journey never finishes it. We're always a part of something that is bigger than ourselves. And even if you are the one who crosses the Jordan, whatever your new groove is, you will be a new person when you get to the other side. Now, interesting, Moses does not get to cross the River Jordan. So who else? So someone else has to lead Israel. And who does it for Moses? Joshua. Joshua is the one who's appointed to do that. And Joshua's name means, and is a name of, I'm not going to tell you. You can Google that and discover it for yourself. So Moses doesn't get to cross the river, but Joshua does. And who is Joshua? We'll see you next week. Take us well.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.